This is CliffCentral.com.
You're back on the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central with me, Greg Nicholson. We're going to change tack a little bit now and look north, or, well, north from South Africa at least, and talk about Kenyan politics. Now, you'll remember our former host, Kingsley Kapuri, was quite passionate about these issues, and we used to follow them quite a bit. So I want to make sure that we continue the trend. And today we've got Nanjala Nyobole on the line from Kenya. She's a writer, a political analyst. Can you hear us, Nanjala? Hello? Okay, we'll just keep on working to get her back on the line. Some of you might have been following the elections recently in Kenya, which last month we looked at, and obviously it was quite contested between the two biggest candidates, President Uhuru Kenyatta and the long-term opposition leader and perennial second-place-comer, Raila Odinga. They went to elections recently, and once again, Kenyatta won. But the issue there was that it had to go. There was wide allegations of vote rigging, as there often are in Kenya, and Raila Odinga decided to challenge the issue in the Kenyan Supreme Court. He was finally successful this time, despite there being fears that either the court would be corrupt, or they would perhaps side with the president and the powers that be. The president actually had won the election by, I think it was 9 percentage points. Instead of that, what happened was quite a moment for Kenya's democracy, where the Supreme Court, with its newly installed Chief Justice, who's seen as quite a stickler for the rules. I think when I was reading about him today, I was thinking about comparisons between South Africa's own Chief Justice, Mokgweng Mokgweng. But what happened there was that eventually the results were overturned. Okay, I think we should have Nanjala on the line now.
Hi.
Hi, Nanjala. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us. I was trying to give a bit of an introduction to the topic, but I'm sure you can take us right through it now that you're with us. So, as I was saying, the Supreme Court ruling, I think it happened, was it about a week or two ago? And it looked like it came to as a surprise to many Kenyans. Some of my friends were just so elated that this sort of, you know, this result came through in terms of overruling the election and ruling it, that it must be held once again. Was it a defining moment for Kenya in terms of accountability and democracy and demonstrating that the country has an independent judiciary?
I think so, yes. I think that we saw a chief justice and a bench take a very strong stance against the same executive that appointed them, which is not only unusual for Kenya, it's a pretty unusual thing globally if you think about it. And I think that the way that the ruling was set out and the way that they explained it, it just showed that it was very much grounded in the law and very much grounded in the current circumstances with the elections, and saying, you know, we've had so many election petitions in Kenya's past, mm-hmm. that it's almost like they were saying, okay, enough of this. We keep tweaking and tweaking and tweaking the law. Let's just take a firm, clear stance on the fact that the law should guide these elections. And that's what they did. And I think it was a really big, important moment for independence of the three arms of government.
For those, for the listeners who are outside of Kenya and haven't been following politics so closely, can you just unpack a little bit more about how surprising this was and why it was such a proud moment for many?
Ooh, how much time do you have? it's a really big deal because elections have always been complicated in Kenya. We had our first multi-party election in 1992. That was problematic. There was huge problems with voting, huge problems with counting. The problem is never with the voting. The problem is always with the counting. And what tends to happen is, then we have an election petition, and then the court says, well, it's fine. The guy who won, in that case, was former President Moi. He was going to win anyway. It doesn't matter. This is just a technicality. And so we've actually had an election petition in 1992, in 1997. We had one in 2013. And then in 2007, we had that whole ICC proceeding. So there's been a legal challenge at every turn. And what you see happening is, as these things are happening, the legal system around elections becomes more and more complicated. So we get new rules, we get a new constitution in 2010, and we have a whole chapter on elections in the constitution, which is very unusual. We have a whole new election body. We had to abolish the old one and start again in 2013. And really, as the regime gets more and more complicated, as the laws become more and more complicated, then the whole process of deciding, of arbitrating who won the election also becomes more and more complicated. So it's not normal for elections to go straight from the polls to the Supreme Court in other parts of the world, I think. I think it happened in Angola as well fairly recently, and they were hoping for the same miracle. But generally, in Kenya, that's usually par for the course. And when you read the decisions that have gone before, you see the courts doing a lot of intellectual gymnastics in order to maintain the status quo and say, look, the guy who won was going to win anyway. This doesn't really affect the outcome. But I think this bench is full of technicians. And these are people who are not there because, you know, our previous Supreme Court justice was an activist. And he was more oriented towards the outcome. But this bench, these are technicians. They said, actually, we're not so much interested in the outcome. We're really interested in how you got there. And in fact, in the ruling Justice Maraga read, he said, if you did a math exam, you wouldn't just get a grade because of a final answer. You would have to show your work. And what the commission failed to do is to show their work. And therefore, you need to go back and you need to take this test again and come back stronger.
Okay, let's stick and continue to talk about the commission. So while this ruling seems extremely positive for the independence of the three arms of state and I guess democracy in general, what does it imply about the integrity of the Electoral Commission? Now, you have to go to elections again very soon, and the commission, the IEBC, has come under this huge cloud so recently.
Yeah, it doesn't make it easier. And I think that what it is what the court tried to do is they tried to walk a very fine line. So if you read the judgment closely, you'll see that they don't say that it was criminal. They don't say that anybody necessarily set out to compromise the election. They say that they just didn't do a good job. So in the criminal law, for example, you have something called criminal negligence, right? So if, for example, you were in your house and you stored a bottle of bleach in a water bottle, and someone drank from that water bottle and got poisoned and died, you wouldn't be guilty of murder. You wouldn't even be guilty of manslaughter because you didn't set out to kill anybody. But something bad still happened, and you had to be held accountable for it. That's kind of the line that the court was trying to walk. They basically said, you didn't set out to screw up this election. You didn't set out to cause any harm, but you did. And you basically need to go back and do better. And that's a very fine legal line that they did, that they walked, but they didn't ask for the commission to start from scratch. They're basically saying, what you have in place is good. Just go back and actually use it.
We've seen protests this week against the IEBC, and I think Odinga's party is calling for the head, the commissioner, to step down. How can anyone trust the institution to now hold free and fair elections after the last results were flawed? And what is the feeling amongst citizens there? Are people starting to feel that this process will now improve?
I think it's really, at this point, we don't really have a choice. There is no way to reform the commission before the election. Keep in mind that the commissioners that we have now, they haven't even been in the job for 2 years because we had this massive protest in early 2016 because of the previous set of commissioners. And so it takes so long to replace commissioners, to replace independent commissioners, that there's actually just no time for it. And I personally don't think that it's a good use of the opposition's time. It's a delaying tactic, in my view, and I think it's a cheap one. And I think that they would be better served to focus on the things that the court said that they needed to focus on, which was tightening up the process. The law in Kenya allows them to have their own independent tally, to actually go out and have representatives in every polling station and do their own tallying. why not focus on recruiting those people instead of asking people to go out on the street and protest, knowing that time is not on your side and the law is not on your side on this? But the second part of your question, what's the mood? I honestly just think we're tired. My reading of Kenya is, at this point, is everybody's really tired. You know, the international press sees an election on voting day. We've been living with this for pretty much the last 3 years and kind of just wanted to go away at this point. You see it in the way the protests go down. The numbers aren't there. You know, in when Kenyans protest properly, you know, the death of Willy Kimani, we shut the whole city down, and the numbers just aren't there on either side, on either Jubilee or NASA. Nobody's coming out to protest because most people are just tired.
Is there cynicism that these guys, Kenyatta, Odinga, and obviously all of their networks within their parties and coalitions, they're just going to find a smarter way to rig the elections?
Yes. That one's easy. yes. And I think that's always going to be the challenge with Kenyan election. Remember, these guys all know each other. Mm-hmm. In 2007... Raila and Ruto were on one side of the election, and Kenyatta was on, and Kalonzo were on the other. So they know each other. They know each other's tricks. They know each other's secrets. They know each other's plans. And that's part of the problem that we have in Kenya, is that their mutual suspicion is grounded in the fact that they know each other so well. So right now they're all acting from that place of the ruling coalition wants to amend the election laws to consolidate the things that the court said this is actually quite unacceptable. So, for example, the manual count. We are required by law to have electronic transmission of results. The ruling party says, no, we want to change that law. We want a law that allows manual counting. And the opposition says, well, hang on, you can't change the election law so close to the election. So that's the challenge that we have as a country right now, is we're dealing with a class of politicians who know each other too well and who are not above that level of manipulating the system in order to make it work. But, you know, really, one other thing that Chief Justice Maraga said in court is that there's no such thing as a perfect election. What you want is for it to be as close to perfect as possible. And even in the U.S., even in Germany last week, it's very rare for an election to actually be perfect. But you just have to keep working towards that, I think.
We know what happened with the violence after the 2007 elections. Is there a serious risk of these tensions escalating to becoming more widespread and sort of violence spreading or repeating itself again? I guess this is the question often us international onlookers always want to know, right? But
yeah.
Is that actually a risk when these things continue to play out? There's allegations, I guess, against each other. Could these things escalate in that sort of direction, or are we actually moving in the opposite direction at the moment?
I think it's complicated. There are many things that are still very much in play that were in play in 2007, the ethnic tribal question, the personalities in question, the stakes have definitely gone, I would say they're even higher. But I think the one factor, well, I'll say two things. One, I think the one factor that everybody overlooks that's really the deciding factor is that Kenyans have changed, that we as a country have changed. And having gone through that particularly traumatic experience, most, you know, I travel around the country a lot talking to different people, and it's a fear that's also very much on people's minds here. And I don't think that the average Kenyan would want things to go down the way they did in 2007. One thing that I've been saying to people is, you know, you don't start political history in 2007, you have to go back. And in 2002, we had a near-perfect election, and hopes were so high. We were so, so, so ecstatic and hopeful, and it was almost inevitable that the next election would be disappointment, because the watermark was so high. And we don't have that now. 2013 election was problematic. 2007, as you said, was problematic. So expectations are really in the toilet, and everybody just is not the space for disappointment is not so high. But the second thing I wanted to mention is that that doesn't mean that there isn't a risk of violence. And I think that to me, the biggest risk factor for electoral violence in Kenya is the police. And we've already seen it in the last 5-6 weeks. There's been disproportionate policing of opposition events, of opposition strongholds. And we've seen 25 people died. A university student died yesterday because of the police invaded the University of Nairobi and tear gassed students while they were in class. One young man died. In the university in Kenya, like in many other countries, is usually affiliated to the opposition university communities, and that's a problem. And to me, if there is anything that's worth watching, is not just what did the police do, which is a problem, but how people respond to that. I cannot stress enough how disheartened I went to some of these communities after the last bout between August 11th and August 14th, and the police had gone into opposition strongholds and beaten and tear gassed and killed the people who they said were protesting. I cannot stress to you how much it broke people's spirits to have that experience. And we had a movement that was starting called Luo Lives Matter, where people were saying, are we actually part of this country when the state can treat us like this and get away with it? That kind of disenfranchisement leads to a counter-reaction. And that, to me, is the thing that we really need to watch, is the cops.
Nangela, before I let you go, can you just very briefly tell me, how likely is it that these elections will go ahead on October 26th? We know that they've been delayed. I think there was a 10-day delay that they've already implemented. It seems like a really short time to prepare a whole election across the whole country.
Oh, Greg, if I knew the answer to that, I would bottle it and sell it and retire somewhere pretty. No, I think it's, on one hand, it's a smaller election. Remember, August 8th, we had 14,000 candidates running across almost 400 different way more than 400 different positions, right? And that all had to be coordinated over a 24-hour period for the actual vote. In this case, we're talking about two candidates, one ballot paper. Everything has already in place. They really just have to do it again. The one factor that I was most concerned about was the national exams, because 90% of the polling stations, gazetted polling stations, are schools, and the national exam starts October 21st. And it wasn't clear how they were going to coordinate that, because that's over a million students that they have to coordinate how the two events come together. But the IEBC, the commission, seems confident that they can do that. So in one way, it's a simpler election. All the laws are in place. All the raw material is in place. It shouldn't be that big a deal. On the other hand, this is Kenya, and there's always that surprise, right around the corner whenever we have a big event. We had it in August 8th, August 7th, the head of IT, August 6th, head of IT at the commission turns up tortured and killed, 2 days to the election. And that's what leads to all of these issues, because they then switch off electronic transmission on almost a third of polling stations. So it's really hard to call in that regard. Is there going to be another surprise around the corner? But I would say, barring any unforeseen circumstances, barring any nasty surprises, there is no reason why we shouldn't have an election on October 26th and reserve the right to say, Karibu Kenya, surprise, we're going to move the date again.
Asante sana, Nangela Nyambola. Thank you so much for joining us once again, and we hope to get you back on the line when and if they happen.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Cheers. That's Nangela Nyambola, a Kenyan writer, political analyst. That's it for us today. Thank you so much for joining. We hope you will stay tuned and tune in next week. Download the podcast, share it far and wide. Thank you.
Fritz Show on CliffCentral.com. This is CliffCentral.com.